Good evening. James McCanny here with my Science Hour, June 26, 2014. June almost over. I can't believe it. Tonight's main science topic, and I'll be talking about other topics, but the main science topic, there's this issue I discussed a little bit last week. I kind of gave it a cursory nod, so to speak, a little discussion. But it keeps coming back. It keeps being promulgated, and I'm going to try and make an attempt at understanding what on earth they are trying to promote with this. But there's an article that's been going around. It was initially published in Nature magazine, which is the British version of Science. And basically, it's a sounding board for Tier 2 fairy tale science. This article then was republished in Scientific American in a touchy-feely kind of an article. Also, it appeared in LiveScience.com, which is kind of a NASA military and other government type of schmooze paper or website, and in many other places. And so I'm trying to imagine what on earth are these people trying to what's the point? I think they're setting it up for some future issue, but what they're saying is that there are oceans of water deep down in the Earth's mantle. And on the first paragraph, I'll just read the first paragraph. I mean, when you read this, it sounds pretty convincing. It says, found, this is on LiveScience.com, it says, found, exclamation point. Hidden ocean locked up deep in Earth's mantle. And it's like, wow, this is pretty earth-shattering. And then the first paragraph says, definitively, with a definitive statement here, it says, deep within Earth's rocky mantle lies oceans worth of water locked up in a type of mineral called ringwoodite, new research shows. And so, at any rate, I'll talk about this a little bit later. But the whole topic of water, it looks like this is a diversionary article, and that's, I guess, the key issue here is diversion of the public's attention regarding water issues. Okay, so at any rate, that I'll get back to that in just a minute. First, a couple. Issues. There seems to be a new disinformation technique out there, and I always knew this would happen, in which people would come out of the woodwork and all of a sudden make claims saying there were books or there were texts or there were authors or something many, many, many decades ago, but unfound until now and only discovered now and only released. And one was that there was a Bible found, and the story is so bizarre that it's just really not even credible, but that claims that Christ was never crucified and all of these bizarre twists. Clearly, you know, when people come out with this stuff, and it was supposedly confiscated from a band of smugglers who, the story just gets so bizarre right from the get-go that it's not even worth repeating. But the reason I'm telling you about this is because there are many stories coming out at the same time in many different areas. There's a story about Planet X that was somebody discovered it, you know, like 90 years ago, and some guy who's now on his deathbed is releasing drawings that he had. And the thing is, I wouldn't mention it, but it's getting airtime on some of the government-paid web pages. And so anyway, what the bizarre twist is that people are coming out trying to make claims and then going back in time and saying, well, this was done, 60 years ago. And of course, that's not the way science is done. When somebody has information, you find a way to make it public as a point in time for your claim. Let me give you an example. In 1996, there was an announcement by NASA and the European Space Agency that one of the satellites that's sensitive to X-rays discovered X-rays to the sunward side of comets. And of course, this was one of the predictions I had made in my early writings, which were published, documented, and published. And so it took, let me see, that was in like 1979, so 89, about 17 years later, after I published my prediction that comets would exhibit X-rays and other high-energy electromagnetic phenomenon, including red-shifted light, which was also discovered. But the point on X-rays is that I had published it, and I'd made it public, and I just didn't sit in my grandma's basement and twiddle my thumbs and talk to myself about it. I made an effort, and I, although it was difficult at that time, I was being blackballed, I was being thrown out of Cornell for publishing my work, but I made a prediction, and I was able to get it published and documented. Okay, so and then when it was discovered in 1996, my claim was already documented, much to the chagrin of NASA scientists. But at any rate, so this thing of all of a sudden coming out and saying, oh, look here, we found this thing that's hundreds of years old or thousands of years old, and here it is, and then making a big story about it is really pretty sketchy at best. But you're going to see a lot more of these kind of disinformation techniques. At any rate, just a listener email. I always like to include listener email because it indicates what people are thinking out there, but also there are disinformation people who write in trying to twist or put words in my mouth, etc. But this one was so striking, I have to read it. And it's very comical almost. It says, why don't I, Mr. James McCanney, ever relate Venus to the ancient catastrophes? And that's the essence of the email. And now you would have to be blind, deaf, dumb, retarded, and I'm not sure what else, to not have heard, and like it's so central to the work that I do. It has been all over my books. I have a CD that has 18 hours of lectures on that topic. it's in my DVDs, it's in my early work. I refer to Velikovsky, which refers to Venus being a comet and the Earth disaster. So like I say, you would have to be deaf, dumb, blind, and retarded to actually send that email to me. But somebody did. So I don't know if they're serious or somebody that's just trying to be funny, but I took it as a person who was serious. At any rate, also I was on a show this past week with James Jancic. I'm a regular guest on James' show, Feet to Fire, out of Chicago. And somebody wrote in, and apparently with an email. At any rate, the listener to James Jancic's show, I was a guest, says, why does not McCanney talk about topics that I discuss when I'm on the John Moore show as a guest? And mentioning specifically, why don't I talk about aliens in the solar system as I had discussed supposedly, allegedly, on the John Moore show? And, of course, I kind of laughed, and I said, I've never talked about aliens in the solar system, let alone on the John Moore show. And I said that on the air. And then later I talked with John Moore, and I said, John, this happened. He said, yeah, we've never talked about aliens in the solar system on his show. And so at any rate, these are subtle innuendos, and I see they're going on the internet too, the old thing where YouTube is trying to quote me about false predictions about Planet X. It just doesn't end. So the end result for new listeners and for, of course, my old listeners, all my information comes out on my webpage on this radio show or where I'm a guest on bona fide radio shows where I've been a long-term guest. That's it. And so any other places where people are trying to quote me or misquote me or whatever the case, I'm not going to run around and try and hunt all these down because there's hundreds of them. Just understand that when you want to understand what I'm saying, go to my webpage. That's the only place you're going to get my information. It's the only place I post information. Okay, but before going into the main science topic tonight, I want to talk mainly to young people. That would be anybody under 60, because in today's world, people are living longer. But actually, this is to youth. And let me explain something. You look out into the future and you see the way people are living now. Let me explain something. It's not a good plan. The living plan, the houses, the excessive use of energy, GMO food, pesticides, herbicides, everything else, antibiotics in animals, so that you're consuming all of these growth hormones, etc., every time you eat a piece of meat. It's not the way to live. So let's look at the basic things in life. You need a place to live, shelter that's comfortable. Building above ground has advantages, but the fact is, for a long time, it's been known that there's a very simple principle. Big buildings are much more efficient because they have much less surface area for the volume. So they're easier to heat. They have much less heat loss. It tends to make sense to build bigger buildings in cold areas or in warm areas. And that's already being done. But as far as individuals, the Earth has a tremendous amount of land for the population. There's a simple example that if you gave every person a 10-foot cube, a 10-foot by 10-foot by 10-foot cube, each person, not a family, not a couple, but each person, you could fit the entire world population into the Grand Canyon. Now, that's a pretty amazing statistic. What it tells you is that there's lots of land on Earth. What we have is poor land management. We have poor water resource management. We have a lot of greedy, overly greedy people like Warren Buffett, Coca-Cola Company, Nestle Company, and the Bushes, and a lot of other people that are out there trying to gain all the water rights in the world. Everybody needs water. There's plenty of water. And there shouldn't be a water shortage, but they're trying to sell that to you. There is plenty of oil in the world, but we shouldn't even be burning any oil because energy is basically free. We have wind energy, solar energy, and the Tesla energy, which is free from the electrical environment of outer space. But we shouldn't be using the quantity of energy that we are using. It's being done to put the profits of mega corporations. Wars are being fought over energy. Wars will be fought soon over water rights. and water control and the need for water in countries where it's already been overpolluted to the point where they can't use it, so they're going to go out and try and steal it from somebody else who's managed to maintain their water supply. Anyway, this is the world you're being given. All you need is a place to live, basic transportation, communication that is reasonable, and I've talked about communications, the debacle in this country regarding communications and the various telecommunications companies, that none of them provide good service and charge you outrageous prices for with a duplication of services. You need food, but you should only eat good food. The food that's being presented to the American public today is simply garbage. It should not be consumed. It's causing health problems. People are getting sick because of the food they eat. Long-term illnesses. So the idea of growing commercially organic, non-GMO, not just organic. Don't be fooled by this term organic, because it's probably still GMO, genetically modified seed. And many times the labeling is distorted. 33 states have passed laws saying that you cannot require companies to put proper labeling on their products. What a distortion of reality. So at any rate, this is the world that's being handed off to kids. So what do we need? You want to live in a modern, advanced society. We have a private enterprise right now ready to go into outer space with the Spaceship 2, the Burt Rutan design with Richard Branson funding it. A very good combination of technology and a wise investor that knows how to invest, not like government investing. Look at all of the government money that has been spent on outer space, on research relative to outer space, all of the aerospace corporations. And collectively, they couldn't get a mouse into space today. But you have a private corporation that's making great strides within real reasonable means, the investment of a single individual, and they're ready to start making it profitable, taking people into space. And as I announced last week, there will be corporations very soon lining up for services to do experiments, research, basic research in outer space using that same platform. So at any rate, we have on one hand tremendous future, and on the other hand, we have a leadership around the world that is destroying every good thing on this planet through excessive resource usage, trying to slam this down people's throats. So literally what we have to do is pull back the reins on resource use. Where does this start? This starts right at home with the families, with the youth, etc. Basically, you need a place to live. You need simple transportation. When you want to go on a trip, use public transportation that's economical and both economically feasible financially and in terms of energy use. Start living as a brotherhood of people and simply enjoy life. Start to spend a serious amount of time enjoying the company of other people. Right now the World Games, the World Soccer Cup games are going on, and it's a tremendous meeting of international good faith. Although you must admit that soccer can get a bit heated, and I'm not sure how much camaraderie there is between nations at the Brazilian World Soccer Games. But at any rate, the world is should be just a wonderful, wonderful place where sports, that's a great thing, that's a great activity. People get excited about it. They travel, they go see other countries based on their country. There's their nationalism is based on a winning sports team, not a winning army going across and sacking some other nation and killing a bunch of people. So at any rate, we have a wonderful future, but we have a devastating future all at the same time. Do revolutions work? The violent revolutions don't work, and they don't work for one simple reason. Because the people that are in control are going to be in control after the revolution. The Russian Revolution is a great example. The Bolsheviks won the Russian Revolution. Did killing the czars make life in Russia better? No. 10 million people died of starvation shortly thereafter. It didn't make things better because the bankers, the Rothschilds, controlled the revolution, and when it was all over, they controlled Russia. So revolutions could work if the resulting power structure overthrew the international banking power structure in that country and kept it out, like it did in Cuba. That's the only place, one of the few places on the planet, that had a revolution and has maintained it. Right now in Cuba, education is free. The dental, medical is free. I just had the benefit of speaking with a medical doctor that worked a career in Cuba. And they said that the people all have medical treatment there, something you cannot say in the United States. The medical treatment in the United States is the worst in the world, in spite of being the most costly in the world. The situation in the medical industry in the United States is absolutely deplorable. Most doctors are leaving because of Obamacare and because of corporate insurance dogma that requires doctors to follow certain procedures. They cannot be a doctor in the United States, so most of them are leaving. The doctors that I know are moving to other countries so they can practice medicine. So anybody that wants to pound their chest about the United States and how wonderful medicine is here, it isn't. It's all over. It's done. It's run by Big Pharma. And so anyway, the whole issue here is that the youth of today are being handed, they have a wonderful future if they can take it and grab it, but it's being controlled by the same bankers who've started all of the wars throughout history, maintain control by wars, and the world is topsy-turvy, upside down and backwards right now, with almost every country on the planet on the brink of war. So is that the way you want to live in the future? Is that your future? Is that what you want? I suppose if your parents are in the industrial, military-industrial complex and you're little millionaires because of it, that's going to be a sweet thing for you. But for everybody else, it's not exactly the way you want to live. So at any rate, just look at what is really necessary to live. And don't think that you have to buy into this program of an expensive house that's going to take 30 years to pay off. I wouldn't buy a house that took more than 5 years to pay off. And this is advice for kids. In terms of a car, buy a car for cash. Don't get a loan on a car. And then what you've got is a lifestyle where all the money you make, it turns back to you. Don't be fooled by this tax advantage because you bought a house. No, that's complete hogwash. It's a simple way, it's a corroboration between the banks, the IRS, and the government to keep you enslaved. So buy a house that you can pay off quickly, buy a car with cash, don't get overinsured, don't buy a lot of insurance because generally insurance isn't going to pay you anything, a dime. So that's why they want insurance required today. Okay, so anyway, this I'm going to quit this little mini lecture to the youth of today, but this also goes for people who are adults. Almost everybody I know is trying to get away from the U.S. economic model. It's an absolute disaster for the people, and it ain't going to end. The eternal wars, the terrorism, the Syria, Israel versus its neighboring countries, all of this constant conflict is never going to end unless somebody just pulls the plug on it. The elections are fixed. You have the election families, the Clintons, the Bushes, the Kerrys, all of these families who are in line to someday run their kids for president. Do you want, you know, do you want Chelsea Clinton or John Kerry's son in the White House or another Bush? You know, that's what they're lining up for you. That's in your future. That's what the banks have in store for your futures, and not anybody that you know. Look around. Look at all the capable, smart kids that you know. Not a single one of them is in line to be president because they're not in the special families that run the world. Is that the world you want? Is that the world that the world you're seeing now, your parents struggling, losing their houses? Is that the world you want to live in? I hope not. Okay, on to the main science topic tonight. A diamond from Brazil, a rather distorted diamond from Brazil, was found. Okay, so this is a rather complex topic, as you will see. And so the article, let me just read a little bit of this article to give you a feel for what it says. I already started, I'll reread. Now this was reprinted also in Scientific American, a slightly different version, but the same information. I'll reread the title here. It says, Found! Exclamation point. Hidden ocean locked up deep in Earth's mantle. In the first paragraph once again. And look at how definitive this statement is. Deep within Earth's rocky mantle lies oceans worth of water locked up in a type of new mineral, a type of mineral called ringwoodite, new research shows. Now that sounds pretty definitive to me. But what we're going to find out here is it's really not quite true. So it goes on to say, the results of the study will help scientists understand Earth's water cycle and how plate tectonic moves water between the surface of the planet and interior reservoirs. And so now this is, I think, what they're going to use at some point to try and twist the water issue here on Earth. But at any rate, then it says, the Earth's mantle is a hot, rocky layer between the planet's crust, core and crust. Scientists have long suspected that the mantle's so-called transition zone, which sits between the upper and lower mantle layers, 255 to 410 miles below the Earth's surface, could contain water trapped in rare minerals. However, direct evidence for this water has been lacking until now. Okay, so that's what the article says, and it goes on with a whole kind of an analysis of this blue olivine water mixture mineral called ringwoodite. Okay, so let me just kind of pick this apart a bit. First of all, they have found one diamond that contains, along in the rock structure, along with the diamond, it contains a mixture of olivine, which is a volcanic glass. It's a rather short-lived volcanic glass, primarily found in meteorites. But however, there are veins of olivine that are exposed around the Earth's surface, around the world. And so olivine is a naturally occurring volcanic glass. Okay, so at any rate, let's examine the assumption that because the diamond was found on the surface of the Earth, it had to have come from deep within the Earth. That's interesting. That's an assumption. There's no evidence that would suggest this diamond even came from the center of the Earth. It was found on the surface of the Earth. Let's take a look at another fact about ringwoodite. this combination of olivine and water. And we find that the only other examples of ringwoodite come from meteorites that fall to the Earth from outer space. There are no other known examples except this one. It's a diamond with a piece of ringwoodite attached to it in the rock structure where it was found. So this is the only example of ringwoodite that they assume came from the center of the Earth. It was found on the surface of the Earth. What would make anybody imagine that it came up from the center of the Earth? Or in fact, any diamond at all. Now, I'm going to talk a little bit later. I've mentioned this in the Diamond Principle. I talk about the fact, my book, The Diamond Principle, I talk about the fact that diamonds are formed in outer space. And they are so plentiful that they can be seen around other stars, rings of diamonds. The mastodons, the woolly mammoths that died in the great catastrophe within the last, let's put it out there a little ways, 13,000 years, I would say more like 4,500 years ago, the upper side of the mastodons were littered with micrometeorite diamonds. They were sprayed like a shotgun. And these diamonds came in and were embedded in their bones. So these babies came in at high velocity. And of course, because they were diamonds, they didn't burn up in the atmosphere. But they were embedded into the surface on the upper side of the mastodons. So something was going on. Like, what happened? How come all of a sudden, when the mastodons died, they fell down and they were sprayed with microdiamonds from outer space? What's going on here? Where are these coming from? So what I explained was that diamonds are created in the electron current on the nose side of comets. That sounds pretty remarkable, but it's a very there's research that shows, and this is, diamonds can be created in the laboratory. You take a vacuum chamber, you put in carbon gas. You take a piece of pure carbon, you heat it up to where it's a gaseous form, and then you send an electron beam into that gaseous mixture of carbon, and what it does is it forms basically a spherical structure of carbon, kind of like a Bucky sphere, and it forms a sphere. And inside of that sphere, with the tremendous pressure that can be garnered from that carbon sphere, the diamonds form, and you can actually form diamonds in a laboratory using this technique. In outer space, the same technique would apply, but you need an electron beam. Where does that come from? It comes from the sunward side of large comets. And as I've said before, it was a large comet that came by the Earth during the demise of the mastodons. And so, gee, where do you think the diamonds came from, the microdiamonds that sprayed the mastodons? It all makes sense if you understand what's going on. What comets are, they're electrical, they're not poofy little snowballs. But, of course, if you don't understand that, if you think comets are dirty snowballs, of course, it makes no sense at all. Where are microdiamonds coming from outer space? So back to the story of the diamond found in Brazil. How does anybody make a claim that this diamond came from the center of the Earth in the first place? Very likely that diamond came from outer space. It's distorted. It had a rough life. But violent things happen in outer space. So that diamond could have been produced in the center of a star in some distant galaxy and came to Earth from outer space. There's no evidence of any kind that would lead you to assume that that diamond came from the center of the Earth. It was found on the surface of the Earth, but since these people have no other clue about how these processes work, they have to assume it came from the earth, and so their only story is that it came from deep inside the earth. Now, in criticizing this article, it's a great platform to talk about a lot of science, a lot of earth science, a lot of space science. Now, let's look at, and I've talked about this, so I'm not going to go into great detail, but let's look at how diamonds could possibly form in the center of the earth. A diamond is a basically pure carbon that's under severe pressure and temperature forms a diamond. That's the story that we're told by standard science. But all the rock around the diamond is softer than the diamond. So how does softer rock create the pressure on the diamond, which is harder? How does softer rock create the pressure on a diamond to form a diamond, even though it's deep in the earth with a lot of pressure, a lot of high temperatures? Well, of course, it's absurd. It's absurd to think that all of a sudden there's this isolated concentration of carbon deep in the earth, and that all of a sudden this rock around it, which is much softer, puts enough pressure on that carbon to form a diamond. And when you think about it, it's really beyond absurd. So nobody has ever seen or witnessed the formation of a diamond in the center of the earth. They simply assume that that's how it is done because they can't imagine any other source of diamonds. But we have the case where both observation of diamonds in outer space, they're littered the bodies of the mastodons. They have been seen in such quantity that they're visible around other stars. And there's a process, a laboratory process, that shows how they're produced from a carbon gas in pure vacuum with an electron beam. Okay, so where do diamonds form? Outer space. They don't form deep in Earth's core. So the fact that olivine, which is a glass that is formed in outer space, it's common in meteorites, and the ringwoodite, which has only been seen to up to this point in meteorites that came from outer space, why would you assume that the ringwoodite that came along with this diamond came from deep within Earth's core? You can see that the initial assumption of this paper has no, just has no clothes. The king has no clothes. But this was published in the March issue of Nature magazine. It was repeated in Scientific American, repeated again on LiveScience.com, and many other places. But let's do something for fun, just for kicks and giggles, as they say. Let's assume that that diamond came from the center of the earth. Let's just assume that and kind of follow it to its logical conclusions. And what they want you to believe is that this implies that there are oceans of water under the earth. Okay, so this is one diamond with an extremely small piece of ringwoodite, olivine and water, attached to it. Now let's understand the logic here of why this would imply, or why someone even would imagine this could imply, that there are oceans of water under the earth. One diamond does not indicate oceans of water. And this is assuming that it did come from the earth. We're playing devil's advocate here. It's an over-exaggerated extrapolation. As I said, ringwoodite only previously had been found in meteorites or in laboratory experiments. This is implying from outer space, so using a series of incorrect assumptions based on incorrect theories, they come to an outrageous incorrect result coupled with an overly extreme extrapolation, implying that a minuscule piece of ringwoodite in a diamond leads one to believe that there are oceans of water deep in Earth's mantle. Now let's look at one of the other concepts they're trying to promote here. How did the water supposedly get down, the oceans of water, get down to 225 to 250 miles beneath the surface of the Earth. How did that water get down there? They can't even tell you how the water got to the surface of the Earth. But what they're saying is that the subduction zone between plate boundaries, the water is being dragged down somehow into a zone where olivine would be a common rare mineral. Wait a minute. A common rare mineral? It's more common than other things, but it's still a rare mineral. It's not like it's something that you're going to find a lot of down there. But let's say there was a lot of olivine. How does the water get down to that level? They're saying it follows the subduction path of plate boundaries. Well, there again, tectonics, plate tectonics, is a concept that really is unfounded. It's got a lot of pretty pictures in textbooks. There's a lot of videos. A lot of professors have gotten PhDs in geology talking about plate tectonics. But the reality is, it doesn't make any sense at all. This is what they need to try and explain mountain building, for example. How do plates being pushed at the plate boundary cause mountains thousands of miles away? So I did a thought experiment one time. I said, let's get some bulldozers. Now we're going to design gigantic 50-mile-long bulldozers. The blades are 50 miles long and 40 miles deep. And we're going to line as many of these up as we can, and we're going to push on the plate boundary in the direction of the center of the continent. Okay, what's going to happen? Now, we actually are providing a physical force, the bulldozers, whereas literally in the plate boundaries, there is no force. Where does the force come from to push continents laterally around the surface of the Earth? Well, they say that it's a vertical, the heat, the vertical upwelling of heat around the plate boundary pushes the plate sideways. Well, what an absurd concept, because if there's that much heat, then the plate boundaries are molten and they don't have any, there's nothing to push on. You don't have anything solid to push on. And so there's no way to push a continental plate around because it would just deform in the area where the force was being created. So just once again, playing devil's advocate, let's create our bulldozers. We're going to line them all the way along the plate boundary, and we're going to start to push. We're going to start to push, and we're going to see if we can create mountains 3,000 miles away. Now, what's going to happen with the bulldozers? They're going to push on the plate. Now, there's a misnomer right here. When they call it the plates, geological plates of the Earth, it's a misnomer, because when we think of a plate, it's like you hold the plate at the edge and your food's on it, it doesn't break, and you set it on the table. That's a plate. It has structure. It has strength. But if you take the plates of the Earth, I don't care if it's the granite in the Rocky Mountains or the plains or the carbon structures, the carbonaceous chondrite rocks or whatever under the Earth, they are very soft rock. So locally, I don't care what kind of structure you say your plate is made out of, they don't have enough strength to withstand the pressure and enter that pressure across a 3,000-mile surface to a plate boundary or to the mountain-building region of the plate. It simply doesn't happen. It's not there. It's not happening. The way mountains are built is when a comet comes through the solar system, a large comet, not the little Halley's comets that have little teeny nuclei. And you have to understand, too, that when we're dealing with comets, very, very few of them are large. Very few of them are planet-sized. The majority of them are small. That's just a statistical configuration. It's a statistical distribution of objects. Most of them are small. Many of them are dust grain. There's very few that are even baseball size. You get up to the size that are, say, 100 feet across or 1,000 feet across. There's very few. And as you get up to planet-sized cometary nuclei, there's extremely few of them. But they're out there and they're moving around, and over millions of years, yeah, they're going to come through the solar system, and every now and then they will come near Earth. They will all form comets as they come into the electrical capacitor of the sun. So at any rate, the whole issue here is that going back to mountain building, when the large comets come through the solar system, and I would estimate there have been 40 to 50 of these in the history of the Earth, and the gravitational wave that's set up in the mantle of the Earth and the crust moves across the surface of the crust. It could be a tidal wave of land that's, let's say, 300 to 400 feet high and moving at 1,000 miles an hour. It's a tremendous impulse when it hits a boundary like an existing mountain range or a rocky region within the Earth's crust or whatever. That wave stops and that energy is absorbed and it throws up the land in that region, creating mountains. This is the way mountains are created. Tremendous forces that are occurring, and it happens very rapidly. The ancients talk about mountain building. They experienced comets, big comets that came through the solar system. They talk about the electrical effects, the pole shifts, etc. So at any rate, the whole issue of plate tectonics and this concept of subduction of plates, one under the other at the plate boundaries, has no foundation at all. There is activity at those regions, but now let's try and imagine, how do you get water? Let's once again play devil's advocate. Let's say that could happen, where one plate is being subducted under another plate and the other plate is rising up over that plate. Okay, well let's imagine now, how is water going to be dragged down along that plate boundary? Water is the least dense of the materials. All of the plate boundary material rock is much denser than water. If you don't believe me, throw a rock in water sometime and see if it sinks. I think pretty much most of the rock at the bottom of the ocean, we would call it of the sinking variety of rock. So the point is that as that rock moves down along the subduction path, the last thing that is going to go along with it is water. Because water is lighter, it's going to be pushed up towards the surface, and the rock is the only thing that's going to go down along that zone. It's not going to drag any water, let alone oceans of water. Very simply put, this is not going to happen. So once again, you have a whole laundry list of fairy tale science assumptions here that assume that somehow vast amounts, oceans worth of water, are being dragged down 250 to 410 miles under the Earth's surface and then combining with olivine to make this mineral. Wow. I mean, this is far-fetched. Folks, this is so beyond far-fetched. Okay, so now let's try and imagine, why on earth are they promoting this? I mean, who refereed this article? I just can't imagine, but now let's look in the world of politics today, and what's the main issue that we're dealing with? We have Warren Buffett buying giant aquifers of water. We have Nestle's. We have Coca-Cola. We have the Bush family, we have the Royal Bank of Canada, all of these entities busy at work confiscating and snarfing up the water resources of the world. And so remember that scientists are at the beck and call of these organizations of these people, because they pay the freight, scientists get a paycheck, and basically they will do what it takes. Now, I'm not saying there's a direct correlation between the Bushes and the scientists who published this article in Nature magazine. It's a bit more subtle than that. But to get it promoted in Scientific America, in all of these other mouthpieces, which are disinformation sites for the government, why are they going to concentrate on this particular article? Well, if there are oceans of water available underneath somewhere down in the earth, now most people aren't quite savvy enough to understand that 250 to 410 miles down, you're not going to drill a well down there and somehow tap into this. But it gives the impression. Let me read this title again because I think it's important. It says, found, hidden ocean locked up deep in Earth's mantle. And so there again, it's a misinformation article. Somehow people will walk away from this article thinking there are vast amounts of water down there. And so don't worry about Warren Buffett buying up the entire Oglala Reservoir and all the water rights. Don't worry about Coca-Cola Company having water rights to Lake Superior. Don't worry about Nestle's company having the water rights to Lake Michigan. Don't worry about that, because there are oceans of water elsewhere. You see what I mean? So that's the only reason I can imagine why this is being promoted, is just to divert the public's attention from any issue focusing on the real issue, the surface water of Earth. And so let me talk a little bit about the surface water of Earth. There is so much clean, fresh water on Earth, it's unbelievable. And I gave an example at the beginning of the show that if you took all of the people in the Earth, 7 billion people, 6 point some billion people, and you gave each one a 10-foot by 10-foot by 10-foot cube, they would easily fit into the Grand Canyon. So at any rate, we could accommodate the cities, all of the pollution problems, by putting all the people there in one spot. But that's a rather amazing statistic. Now the question is how to provide housing, food, resources for these people to live. And actually, it's if they live in houses made of earthen products, cement, or other types of earthen product, leave the wood alone, let the wood regenerate. Don't worry about consuming vast amounts of energy. The energy that we do get comes from wind energy, solar panels, and that's another issue. A friend of a friend says that if the solar panel, if the excise tax on solar panels would be reduced, we could end the energy crisis now. But isn't that strange that they're trying to promote solar panels and have a huge excise tax to keep them outrageously expensive and not compete with standard forms of energy like oil, coal, and nuclear? The investment, the payback on investment for solar is simply not there. The average home installation for solar runs between $10,000 and $20,000. You have to, in the lifetime of that owner, it would probably begin to pay back by the time he died, if he was a young guy. So, but this is all due to the excise tax. All it is glass. Solar panels, that's all it is, a little doping in glass, and no big deal. But wind energy also, not the three-blade Mickey Mouse NASA-designed wind blades, wind generators that are dotting the countryside, but real wind generators. But also, the wind, solar, and Tesla power, where we could derive the bulk of our energy needs easily. The whole situation is the population of the Earth is bound up in what a friend of mine calls the banker model, where interest on money, all the money is borrowed money, so the extent of work, everybody is being sapped of their labors through taxation, warfare, whatnot, and the world is just being bled dry. We are using resources at a breakneck pace, and the militaries are using far more resources than you can even imagine. So this can't go on. This simply can't go on. The wars, if the resource grab and use continues, the wars will be over the lack of resources, and that's what's going on. So at any rate, if I were king for a day, believe me, this world would be one different place, and there would be a lot of people in prison who are now very wealthy. So that's the way it would be. In prison, with the key thrown away, let's put it that way. Just want to mention that my webpage, jmccsci.com, I've got the new personal water filters, and these I'm getting very good reviews from these. The people are, the first waves of these going out, the people are using them, and like the advantage of a container that has a latching top where you can store water on a small scale for travel, emergency, sports, etc. And so I'm really excited about those. The standard water filters become water independent. That's the term I use. You have to become water independent. Be your own independent source of fresh water. The flooding in the upper Midwest, and also like the E. coli scares in Portland, Oregon, these water filters will take out the chemicals. The pre-filter will take care of the chemicals. The E. coli would come out in the standard off-the-shelf 7-inch candle filters that I sell. The filtration capability is there to handle the emergency needs, the disaster, the bacteria, for example, in the Portland, the E. coli that turned up in the Portland water supply. People should become water independent. That means your own fresh source of water, your own ability to store it and carry it with you. Very simple. Also, my books are on the webpage, the whole laundry list of books, starting with the Planet X Comets and Earth Changes book, Surviving Planet X Passage pamphlet, Atlantis to Tesla, The Colburn Connection, The Diamond Principle, The Weather book, my book on water, which talks about the water rights being grabbed around the world, and then the most recent book, Breaking RSA Codes for Fun and Profit. All of these available on my webpage. I'm out of time. We'll talk to you next week. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.